Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the RTL Group Quarter One Analyst Call. My name is Maddie, and I will be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the presentation, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to Mr. Andrew Buckhurst to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining this call for our results for the first quarter of 2014. On page two, you will find the agenda. First, the highlights from Q1, then a quick review of the financials, followed by a review of our main business segments, and lastly, our outlook statement. I'd like now to introduce our speaker for today, our Group CFO, Elmar Heggen, who will now begin the presentation.
Thank you, Andrew, and good afternoon from me as well. Starting on page three. Overall, we had a good start into the year and generated one of our best first quarter results. New channels have been launched, and we significantly enhanced our U.S. content business via the acquisition of 49Fast Productions. Before going into the details, I would like to point out that we have restated the 2013 numbers to take into account the impact of IFRS 11. I highlighted this accounting change during the full year results presentation. Revenue has been the main line item impacted by the effect of this new standard. Still looking at Q1 2014, we saw improving TV advertising market conditions in most European countries. While Groupe M6 and RTL Radio operated in a very challenging economic environment in France, all other broadcasters reported higher or stable profit contributions year-on-year, benefiting from the recovery of most European TV advertising markets. It is important to note that due to the late Easter this year, some advertising revenue from the traditional build-up campaigns was shifted into the second quarter. As a result, group revenue remained stable at 1.3 billion euros, with EBITDA down just over 6% to 195 million euros. This was mainly due to timing effects of investments made by Groupe M6 in its program grid and a lower contribution from some of the non-advertising related businesses. Germany and FremantleMedia broadly maintained their margins, while the Netherlands delivered good margin growth. The reported net profit for RTL Group shareholders fell by almost 31% to 92 million euros, due in part to the lower EBITDA performance and higher interest charges. 2013 comparatives were also impacted by the impairment reversal on Atresmedia, which added 30 million euros to last year's first quarter. Combined with the type of cash generation that we have consistently delivered, we have operationally made a good start into the year. Added 12% of EBITDA was converted into free cash flow, meaning that our net cash position was 142 million euro as at the end of the period. As things stand today, we are tracking below our guidance on gearing levels of between 0.5 and 1 times net debt to EBITDA, and inevitably, there will be some speculation around our intentions here. The way we are approaching things remain the same. We aim to grow the groups across broadcast, content, and digital, and are assessing a number of M&A opportunities, but there's nothing to announce today, and we'll update you as and when appropriate. If we do not identify opportunities to create value, then, as we have said many times before, we'll consider returning cash to shareholders through an extraordinary dividend. The board will meet next to review the treasury position around our interim results. We'll weigh things up then and provide you with an update at our half-year announcement in August. Turning now to the financial review, starting on page five. Reported group revenue was down just 4 million euros, or 0.3%, to 1,313 million euros. Underlying performance was good, but comparatives were challenging as last year's first quarter benefited from an early Easter and the handball World Cup rights, which UEFA Sports sold for approximately €20 million in January of last year. Group operating expenses grew by €10 million or 0.9% compared to a year ago, resulting in a reported EBITDA of €194 million. Accordingly, our EBITDA margin fell slightly to 14.8%. Our EBITDA increased to €249 million, resulting in a 90% EBITDA margin for the first quarter. Moving on to the next page, I'm now at slide number 6. The net profit attributable to RTL Group shareholders for the period was €92 million compared to €133 million last year. This reflects the lower level of EBITDA, higher interest charges, as the group's new capital structure only came into effect at the end of the first quarter of 2013, the partial reversal of an impairment on RTL Group's shareholding in RTL Media, booked last year amounting to €13 million, and a higher tax expense due to lower commission income on the tax pooling with Bertelsmann, in line with our previous comments and prior year adjustments. This translates into earnings per share of 60 cents per share, down from 86 cents per share last year. Moving now on to cash flow, page 7. Our cash conversion ratios remain at a very high level, reaching 112% during the first quarter. The net cash position of €142 million will obviously be reduced by the dividend payment made yesterday of €696 million. I will now continue with a short business review. Starting in Germany on slide number 9, where our family of channels maintained its significant audience share lead, especially in the quarter marked by the winter wind Olympics on the public channels. Our main channel, RTL, reported a share of 14.2% and is still the only channel with a double-digit result. Our second-tier channel, Vox, had a more difficult start into the year, feeling a particular impact from the Winter Olympics and a strong grip on RTL in January. Since March, however, we have seen a rebound in audience share and are pleased how things are going on. Elsewhere, RTL Nitro continues to report strong growth and, despite being less than 2 years old, already has an audience share of 1.4%. In terms of financials, on page 10, revenue decreased by 0.9%, mainly driven by lower advertising revenue. Despite this, EBITDA was maintained at the same level as last year, a tough comparative, as this marked our best ever first quarter EBITDA for Mediengruppe RTL Deutschland. Accordingly, our margin rose from 29.1% to 29.8%. Looking now at UbernFit, with an audience share of 16% in the key commercial target group, UbernFit remains the clear number 2 in France. W9 attracted an audience share of 3.8%, while Sister grew 0.4 percentage points to 1.1%, remaining the leading channel amongst the 6 new DPT channels launched in December 2012. Overall, the family of free-to-air channels reported a flat audience share of 20.9%. Moving on to the next page, the French advertising market remained tough. However, M6 continues to outperform, with advertising revenue down 1.8% across its free-to-air channels. Despite tough advertising markets, overall revenue was stable thanks to growth in non-advertising businesses, notably distance selling. EBITDA decreased to €43 million, reflecting timing differences with respect to investments in the program grids of TV channels and a lower contribution from the football club Girondins de Bordeaux. Turning now to the Netherlands on page 13, the combined audience share was 33%, clearly ahead of the public broadcasters despite the Winter Olympics broadcast and TSS Group. This represents a year-on-year improvement of 0.8 percentage points across the family of channels. In terms of financials, as you see on the next page, revenue was up 8.9% year-on-year, and the spot advertising market estimated to be up 6.8%. EBITDA was up 2 million euros, or 50%, to 6 million euros. Let's now turn to Fremantle Media on page 15. Revenue has increased to 313 million euros, or 4%, despite continued negative foreign exchange impacts. The top-line result has been driven by growth in the European production business, which was boosted by the theatrical launch of the film De Medicus in Germany and in Asia, as well as in Latin America. The decrease in North America and licensing was driven by a reduction in the number of produced hours of American Idol and lower license fees on tape sales. EBITDA was stable at 9 million euros. At the end of March, we announced that Fremantle Media had acquired a 75% stake in 495 Productions, a US-based reality production company specialized in unscripted female-suit docu-series for cable networks. They are best well-known for MTV's hit show Jersey Shore and the multiple spin-offs that have been created. This investment significantly strengthens our position in North America. This concludes the business review. To summarize, we had a good start into the year, although our results have been impacted by seasonal effects of the late Easter and program investments at the level of UMCs. Looking at the full year of 2014, as you are aware, 2014 is a significant sport year with both the Winter Olympics and the FIFA World Football World Cup. These two events would benefit the audience shares of the public broadcasters in the first half of 2014 at the expense of our channels. However, for the full year 2014, we expect the combined audience shares of our family of channels to be only slightly different compared to 2013. Please also note that the group revenue will continue to be negatively impacted by two quite specific events in 2014, namely the application of IFRS 11, which changes the way the group can account for its joint ventures, notably Super RTL, and the disposal of Mr. Goodyear by Group MCs. Accordingly, we confirm our guidance for the full year 2014 of total revenue and EBITDA at constant scope and exchange rate being broadly stable. That concludes the formal section of the call. Thank you. We are now available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again, and you will be advised when to ask your question. And our first question comes from the line of Chris Jonan from HSBC. Please go ahead with your question, sir.
Yes, thanks, Klaus. Thanks for taking the questions. Couple. First, on Spain, there's been some speculation in the press. Bertelsmann, head of Spain, apparently suggested that you could be interested in raising a stake in Atres Media. Of course, I don't expect you to say anything specific, but maybe you can remind us of the strategic rationale behind owning that 19% stake and why it could make sense for you to expand beyond that, whether you have any general view on that. That would be my first question. Second, on the audience shares, I mean, I have to admit, looking at the first 4 months, you've taken quite a beating versus competition. So I'm just curious what you think is going to happen to the audience shares for the rest of the year, I mean, including the World Cup, and whether you see any need for incremental investing in RTL Core Channel, for example, to support that. So basically, I'm also asking whether the old OPEX guidance is still in case. And then thirdly, on the 4&5 production acquisition, I remember with Q4, you said you had a somewhat significant U.S. acquisition on the content side in the pipeline, and I think this deal is relatively small to what some people were expecting. So maybe I know you've already mentioned that you're assessing a number of M&A opportunities, but could you also maybe talk about the scope of what you have in the what you have in the pipeline? Of course, we're I'm hinting at the potential of extraordinary dividend with Q3. That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, Chris. Thanks a lot for the questions. Let me try to take them one by one. I mean, Spain, we are very happy that it looks, even though it's early days, as, you know, we should have seen the worst. I think that the year-to-date development of the overall TV advertising market in Spain is a promising sign. I say this with a certain degree of caution because I think it's a bit still too premature to start celebrating the turnaround of the market, but at least here today we see a slight positive development in the overall advertising market performance, and we are optimistic this trend should be continued in the quarters to come. It's true that Spain is currently the only part in which we don't have operational control amongst our broadcasting businesses. And that is simply because of the fact that the day that we decided to enter into the Spanish broadcasting business, control was not available. We are getting along with the co-shareholders extremely well. We are in a partnership and have agreements with them since 2003. First, I mean, let's not speculate. There is, as we speak, no opportunity to go for control, in our view. But if, for whatever reason, the controlling shareholder would potentially envisage to give up control or to share control of someone, we would be there to talk to them and to consider opportunities that may or not arise out of such a talk. In terms of honest of the performance for the first quarter and looking into the full year 2014, we continue to invest into the core channels of our financial channels. Having said this, we still believe that the OPEX guidance that we've given in the past is still accurate and should be maintained. We have started to address the weak performance of Vox for the months January and February, and you already see that looking into the March and April figures, we are back to a 7% plus performance on the channel. So despite those sports events, as we also said into portfolio guidance, we remain optimistic, and we believe that we should be broadly in line with the prior performance, and we should be able to achieve this without putting more money into the grid than what we indicated previously. In terms of Fremantle and the acquisition of 4&5, the question was more or less, is this, in terms of scale, sufficient? I think the answer is we continue to explore other opportunities, as we mentioned. It would be, again, premature to tell you, you know, what we exactly follow, and we are not yet in a position to put a likelihood, a percentage probability onto those tickets. We have all the financial firepower that we need in order to pursue those acquisitions, and as we said, if we have identified opportunities to pursue profitable growth, that is something that we would like to do. And if we are not convinced about either the strategic fit nor the financial viability, we wouldn't do it, and we would then discuss together with the board to what extent we would like to return cash back to the shareholders. But for the time being, we continue to explore a number of opportunities, and as we have been able to execute 4&5, we also believe that we should be able to execute additional projects throughout the course of this year.
Okay, very clear. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Adrien de Saint-Hilaire from Exane BNP. Please go ahead with your question.
Good afternoon, Elmar. Good afternoon, Andrew. Thanks for taking the questions. I've got a couple of them, please. First of all, I'm just wondering why profits are down at Fremantle despite revenues growing organically and despite the fact that you've done some heavy restructuring before, so normally we should see the benefit of that, but apparently it's not the case yet. That's the first question. Second question is, I was wondering if you could share some outlook around Germany for Q2. We heard this morning from another German broadcaster, they are looking towards mid-single-digit growth for the market in Q2. I was wondering what your opinion was. H2, I guess you don't have enough visibility. And the last question is, what role would you like to play in a potential in-market consolidation in France? Do you see any opportunity there? Better opportunities now or not? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrea. Fremantle. What we have been able to do is we have launched a number of new shows, formats and initiatives, and unfortunately, typically this doesn't yield immediately into additional EBITDA. It helps you to increase your revenue, but typically it doesn't really add to the short-term profitability, simply because we always take all the cautious view and try to write off all the development costs and everything that is associated to such a launch in the first quarter. So we expect that the profitability line will follow, but it will take time, and there's always a time delay between the revenue and the profit development when it comes to new launches at the level of Fremantle. In terms of outlook for Germany, Q2, what we can confirm, and here I'm talking about mainly April, but we can also see this already becoming accurate for May, is yes, for those 2 months, it looks as if German TV advertising market is up mid to high single-digit percentage, but we don't have yet a visibility on June, and that is why I would refrain from giving you a quarter two guidance, simply because we don't know how June will be coming in. But we can confirm that we have seen a good momentum in April, as expected, by the way, because of the Easter shift, and we also see currently a rather positive development from the month of May, but we don't have a degree of visibility for June, and that is why the mid to high single-digit market increase for April and May we can confirm, but for June it's too early. France market consolidation, it's a tough one. I don't see the market consolidating currently. I think that it's, you know, the regulator decided to launch an additional six channels, unfortunately, in a time where the market is shrinking, it's deflating. That's not easy. And you see it also in our Q1 results. I think that other than France, we've been in line with prior year, even partly up in the portfolio. But we are down 70 million in France in the first quarter, which unfortunately is the full explanation for our full group figures being down 13 million from 207 to 194. So currently we are in the, where we are in terms of environment. But I currently don't see any real opportunities or any movements in terms of market consolidation.
That's very clear, Almar. Thank you very much. Can I just confirm, or could you please confirm actually what you were saying at the full year results regarding the Fremantle's guidance for EBITDA in 2014, given the Q1 developments? Nothing you said at this time that you would expect it to be down, but
yes, we believe it will be down. It will be slightly down. We already know that unfortunately we have lost X Factor in the US. Typically, X Factor has been broadcasted in Q4, so it is not yet baked into the Q1 figures. But we know that we will have lost it, and therefore we expect this to have an impact in the second half. So currently we reconfirm what we stated at the end of the year. That means that we expect revenue and EBITDA being down, slightly down compared to 2013.
Very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Lina Yang from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead with your question.
Good afternoon. It's Lisa from Goldman Sachs. A couple of questions. I mean, firstly, is on your advertising share. I mean, Q1, you lost a little bit of share to your competitor. I mean, how do you see your advertising share trends for the rest of the year? And do you think this share loss is mainly due to your kind of weaker audience share performance? And second question, which is again on the audience share on the RTL flagship channel. I mean, in the last few years, it has moved from 18% to now about 14%. I'm just wondering what are the main reasons for that? Is that due to a couple of shows, or do you just think you really it's just due to programming spend? And what are you planning really to address those issues? And does it have any major impact on the pricing? And last question is on M6. I mean, similarly, they have also faced difficult audience share trends in the last 12 months. And in April, I mean, the audience share for the core channel was close to 10%, was even below 10%, which is, I think, the key threshold for them. So do you think there's a need for reinvestment there as well? Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Lisa. What we have seen is a phenomenon that we have observed often in prior years, that is a slight increase in a single year, which typically follows with a slight increase the next year. So there's nothing dramatic. But I believe that when we look into the German TV advertising market share, first there have been some additional channels launched for our main competitor, ProSieben. Plus, admittedly, our audience performance on Vox, especially in January, February, was not at the point where we wanted it to be, so we have seen a slight decrease. I think that this is not a real indicator for the year. And the second thing is, we always had smaller fluctuations up and down, and let's not forget that we are comparing 2014 to pretty tough comps in 2013. In terms of fragmentation on RTL, a strong start in January, especially with the format I'm a celebrity to get me out of here. But then obviously, February was the month of Winter Olympics that took place on the public broadcaster. We expected to lose audience share on the main channel simply because a lot of people were attracted by the Olympics, and there's been quite a shift away from not only RTL but also other commercial broadcasters. And also there has been the Champions League in football that was broadcasted on ZDF, again, public television, and that obviously decreased the audience shares of the private channels to a certain extent. In terms of need to reinvest into the grid of MCs, I mean, in a market that is fragmenting, we need to basically make sure that that we don't jeopardize our market positions. And, of course, we discussed together with management to what extent we might need to revisit the overall audience spend on the grid. But I wouldn't expect now that all of a sudden we need to top up the program grid spend by a very significant amount of money. But, of course, we have had some additional investments already in the first quarter 2014. For example, we have invested in shows of Les Marseillais. We have broadcasted more movies than what we previously planned. This is not massive in terms of money, and therefore is not really very significant in terms of deviation to what we forecasted. But yes, in a fragmented market, there is from time to time the necessity to readdress this and to basically strengthen the grid in order to make sure that we don't reach too much
different environment.
Yeah, because I think M6 guidance on farming costs for the core channel was basically flat in 2000, for this year, so you think that could be at risk a little bit?
I mean, we typically look at it from overall the sector of standard channels, and I believe that we will need to continue to strengthen the program. So I personally would expect, but again, this is not massive, that we see slight increases rather than it being flat.
Great, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Julian Rossi from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead with your question.
Thanks. Good afternoon. I have three questions. The first one is on use of cash. I understand your point about waiting to see if you're going to be making acquisitions. Is there any other way you can guide or help us on use of cash? Basically, your cash flow from operations is always about 1.1 billion. Is there any way you could give us a proportion of how much you would like to return to shareholders and how much you would like to spend on M&A? On average in any given year? I guess my point is your special dividend is much bigger than the ordinary one, so that makes a lot of difference for income funds and people interested in dividends. My second question is, can you give us some guidance on tax and net interest for the year? Maybe a tax rate and net interest cost, that'd be helpful. And just to make sure we all have the correct number, can you give us the exact like-for-like 2013 EBITDA, constant scope and constant currency with the current exchange rate, just so we know exactly what we're looking for this year. Thank you.
Let me start with the use of cash. Thanks, Julian. It's true that we've been able to generate an operating cash flow of roughly 1.1 billion over the last 1-2 years. But look, our net cash position at the end of March was 142 million euro. We've now streamed up almost 700 million, 696 million to be exact, in terms of dividends. So again, we are basically in this guidance, admittedly at the lower end of the 0.4 to 1 times net debt to EBITDA range. We also said during the re-IPO process that we believe that something like 250 to 300 million euro is a good average over time for M&A. There might be years in which we will do more. There have been years in the past in which we did less, but if you assume 250 to 300 million, I believe that this is a good mid to long term average, which leaves on top of the ordinary dividends in some years potential space for extraordinary dividends. Our preference is to pay those if we have not been able to reinvest those funds into profitable growth. And again, as I said earlier, it's difficult to tell you from today's perspective to what extent we might find investment opportunities in the weeks and months to come that fulfill all of our criteria. So we look at it. First, we'd like to pay the ordinary dividends to the shareholders and at the same time pursue the M&A strategy that we have explained to the financial markets. And the extraordinary dividends are basically the result of us having paid to the shareholders the ordinary dividends, plus having invested in growth. If then the cash is still available, we will discuss with our board to return it. In terms of tax, we explained that we will continue to use up the tax losses available at the level of surplus money. We indicated that our tax rate is expected to convert to 30%. We will not be there in all likelihood for 2014, but I would expect it to be somewhere close to 29%, maybe slightly below 28.5% to 29%. But as we go along, I think that in the medium to long run, it is likely to converge to 30%.
Just one very quick follow-up. Is it a safe assumption to say that you'll be tracking behind guidance as you've been doing in terms of leverage, and that every time we have to adjust, you know, for the dividend payment you achieve after the close. Like in this case, you have net cash in March, but you're paying the dividend later. So on a pro forma basis, it's 0.5. Is that going to keep going?
For the time being, it hasn't been discussed whether this is the way we'll also handle it in the future, but it has been, for the time being, discussed and decided that way together with the board colleagues. So I think that the answer is probably yes, even though no formal decision has been taken.
That's great. Thanks.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Ian Whittaker from Liberum. Please go ahead with your question, sir.
Thank you very much. Just one question, actually, and it just has to do with Fremantle and content generally. I mean, we've seen a number of content acquisitions being done by other players in recent weeks. Do you think there's a need to accelerate the switch of Fremantle from its production base to more ownership of intellectual property at the risk of being left behind? Obviously, you're taking steps to do that already, but it does seem as though that other players in the market are stepping up their efforts to take over available assets.
Yeah, I mean, we've done quite a bit, but we haven't pursued the bigger tickets. I mean, look, we have acquired recently Mesofilm, and that was strengthened our presence in drama, especially in crime series. We now did 4 and 5 in the U.S. Obviously, those companies, you can't compare them in terms of scale and size, for example, with all three, the announcement that was made earlier. We continue to explore the opportunity that I would not exclude that we might even do more than two, for example, acquisitions in a single year, but what I can't say on this, whether those will be as big as what, for example, you've seen being announced today, the acquisition by Liberty and of all three, and also ITV that was announced yesterday. But we are looking into that space closely, and we will continue to move along and to continue to pursue this M&A strategy that we also explained previously.
Great. Can I just ask a follow-up question? Can you reconfirm that you're not interested in going into any more European markets on a free-to-air basis, i.e. acquiring free-to-air broadcasters?
What we can confirm is clearly that we would not want to go into subscale markets. Please don't close me on it, but we wouldn't want to buy the number two in Bulgaria, for example, simply because we don't believe that we will end up adding shareholder value to our business. The second thing is we wouldn't want to spend $1 billion-plus on a another kind of broadcasting market in Europe. Let's take, for example, the example of Turkey, for example, where we believe that the market setup would not be solid enough to justify for such a move. We also said in the past there are some portfolio issues that we might want to look into. Very often it has been in the press that RTL might finally make its way into Flanders, which I believe could then also be very logical because we are market leaders in the French-speaking part of Belgium, plus we are the market leader in the Netherlands. So I wouldn't say categorically that we will not look into market opportunities within Europe, but we will not go into either subscale markets or slightly more exotic markets, which would potentially require upfront investments of $1 billion-plus.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Chris Kippers from Peter Tan. Please go ahead with your question, sir.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for my question. Just one, actually. Just coming back on the cash generation within the group, which remains indeed quite firm. Could you confirm us what would be a level of M&A whereby RTL would fall back to, let's say, the official payout ratio? I mean, could you shed some light on that? And then a second, just a small follow-up regarding the Easter effect. Could you quantify how much the impact would have been on Q1 and what can you expect from this on Q2? Thank you.
I mean, our dividend policy states that we aim to dividend between 50 and 75% of our net result, or we set adjusted net result in case we have specific one-offs that needs to be normalized. So typically, if we look at our net results, which on average might be around 700 million, we're talking between 350 and 500 million that we would potentially pay as an ordinary dividend, pretty much in line, by the way, with what we have paid recently in terms of ordinary dividend, which was 250 or 387 million euros. Maybe this could potentially evolve to a slightly higher figure over time, maybe 250 to 3 euros per share. If you then add M&A of 250 to 300 million as the mid to long term average, as we discussed earlier, this basically eats up a billion of cash flow. So our room to pay extraordinary dividends in times where we decide to pay ordinary dividends of between 350 and 500 and then us achieving investments, M&A, so to say, in profitable growth of 250 to 300 would basically limit this discussion on extraordinary dividends to a very low amount of maybe 100 million per year.
Okay, thank you. And follow up?
Chris, what was your second question?
Regarding the Easter effect, how much was it on Q1? Could you quantify this a bit? We of course saw the effect of MCs, but what was the Easter effect if you would take into account what will still come in Q2? Thank you.
There's really not one answer because it really depends on market to market, because in some markets we see this Easter effect, whereas in others we don't. In Spain, for example, the story is always different, like in Germany. In Germany, we have seen in the past that really in the month of Easter, there's always a stronger month than in the previous month. So there we have a tendency not to look at a single month, but at March and April combined. Whereas in France, we believe that this is rather neutral. We don't see this extraordinary Easter impact the same way we see it in Germany. So it's difficult to say for the RTA Group because we would need to go into the various markets. But clearly, we see reconfirmed for Germany, as we expected, a stronger month of April at the expense of March if we compare 2014 to 2013.
Okay, thank you. Clear.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Laurie Davison from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi there. Just two follow-ups, if I can. When you were just talking about free cash flow there, you're referring to 1 billion of free cash flow. You did 1.2 billion in 2013, and assume the most European markets are certainly not getting worse over the next few years, then that should be growing. So doesn't that give you a lot more headroom than you were just referring to on a crude basis for extraordinaries going forwards? The second question was, you previously talked about being happy at the upper end of your current leverage range, so the 0.5 to 1 times. Is this still true, and are there any plans to revisit this leverage range now that we are seeing advertising recovery, or we have seen advertising recovery since you set that target? Thanks.
Thanks, Laurie. Yes, I mean, the 1.2 billion you're referring to, this is basically pre-tax. So, yes, obviously I would need to deduct for the 1.2 the 200 to 300 million that we often see in terms of tax, and then again I'm at roughly 1 billion, and then ordinary dividends minus M&A would then leave the room for extraordinary in a rather narrow range. In terms of gearing up the company, we always said that we as a management team wouldn't mind to also go to the higher end of that range, because still we believe that at one turn the company is not heavily geared, we would still have all options available. We wouldn't limit the company in terms of pursuing opportunities, and that is why we always said it previously that as a managed team we can live well. Whether the company is geared up with 0.5 or 1 times EBITDA, we as management team do not matter. This is still accurate. And if you look where the company is coming from, we used to be a very cash-rich company. If you look at the year-end closings over the last years, we often ended up with roughly 1 billion of cash. We then changed this picture and all of a sudden became a company that borrowed money, we are a pretty conservative bunch of people, and already that shift was a change in what we've experienced in prior years. So I think it's early days, but what we wanted to say is that we are open-minded in terms of management team. If there is an opportunity to create value and to give the company by more than 0.5 times, we will be available to do so.
And just to follow up on that last point, will you actually be formally proposing a raise in the leverage range at the board, the interim or full year board meeting?
We will discuss that together with the other board directors. The process typically is that, again, we will look at what are the very likely M&A opportunities that we will most likely be able to pursue. And then automatically we'll look at cash flow and then enter into the discussion what to do with any potential surplus cash. And then when typically discussing about the calibration of dividend payments, we also then discuss about whether we would like to have a lower or slightly higher gearing. And there management will, as I said earlier, indicate its preference to also, we can live also with the higher part of that range, because whether you're here at 0.5 or 1 times, this is not prohibitive and will not limit your entrepreneurial option on how to grow the company forward.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Emma Dunk from JP Morgan. Please go ahead with your question, Emma.
Yeah, hi. It's actually Filippo Lofranco from JP Morgan. I have two questions, please, which are related to the question on Fremantle Media that have been asked previously by Ian. And they relate really to the IP. The first question is that could you please give us a rough idea of how many of your programs you own the intellectual property? And the second question, given that I think that it is quite low disproportion compared with other business models, such as the one run by ITV, and considering that it looks like that this business is struggling to find further growth, would you consider looking into your business model and going after a production which is more oriented towards owning intellectual property? Thank you.
Filippo, hi, it's Andrew. I think probably reassess or readdress some of the misconceptions about Fremantle. If you look at, for example, on the game show catalog, it's probably got one of the largest game show catalogs outside of the US, and that's something that we own fully. We also own a lot of our, obviously, our drama productions. You look at The Neighbours. We've talked about this also, the three big, shall we say, entertainment shows. Clearly, we own or partially own the IP for some of those shows. So actually, there is an awful lot of IP already within Fremantle. And you compared it to ITV, which I think you also have to go back and look at ITV as to what it is still, and obviously what it was much more in the past. It's basically an in-house production company for the ITV broadcast channel. So clearly, whatever they produce, they own the IP for, because they will then obviously broadcast it through their free-to-air channel. So it was a totally and is a totally different business model, which they're now actually trying to change, and to a certain extent try to copy the Fremantle, so say, international footprint. So I don't think you can really compare Fremantle and ITV, and I don't. I have certainly no idea as to how much IP we've got in the business, and I'm not sure how interesting that would be from an analyst perspective. And if you look at Fremantle as well in terms of its history, it's always grown through acquisition. It was the old Pearson TV business. It was Grundy at one stage. It was All American. We bought Talkback in the UK, and it's been built up over time through lots of different types of acquisitions. All of those obviously are around trying to retain talent, but also trying to bring IP into the business, which we can exploit through the global footprint and a production business and a distribution business that is part and parcel of Fremantle. So we're not doing anything different today than sort of management were doing 5 or 10 years ago. Obviously, we're looking at different maybe types of business, whether it be cable production businesses, as 495 Productions in March. We're looking at Scandinavia, which is why we made the investment in Miso last year. So there's constant search for new business bring into the Fremantle sphere so that we can leverage it throughout the network, which is actually a very, very unique and very valuable part of the business.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Julien Roch from Barclays. Please go ahead with your question, sir.
Yes, hi there. It's Julien Roch with Barclays. Just to beat the extraordinary dividend question to death, just on the numbers, to be 100% sure, so you're generating free cash flow post-tax of $1 billion. You're saying that the ordinary dividend is $350 to $500, and the M&A is $250 to $300. So that means that you would have left $200 to $400 for extraordinary dividend. Do you agree with those numbers?
In kind of normalized years, yes, they are pretty accurate. This is a good average.
Okay. Now, on the 250 to 300 of M&A, you've never spent that apart from 2005. So if I look at the last 5 years, you spent 14, 30, 134, 8, and 79. So is there a change in the strategy? You're going to be much more active? Or is 250 to 300 an aspirational target?
Well, I think that there is an understanding at the level of board of directors of RTL Group that we would like to continue to acquire suitable assets that are a strategic fit, that makes sense, and this kind of level of has been discussed before, and we would like to grow specifically in digital. So the 250 to 300 million is, I think, not only a good average, but you can basically take with you that this is something there that has been discussed, and for what in principle there is an understanding at the level of the board of directors.
Okay, and just how much have you spent in M&A in Q1?
The value, obviously, we have bought 75% of foreign clients. And he's also bought Hitchcock TV. So all in all, the positions of subsidiaries, net of cash required, will be close to 20 million. It's not huge. Only for the first 3 months.
Okay. And on the, as you said earlier, following a question from Laurie, that you were still happy at the upper end, higher end was fine. It was early days. So you were saying that 6 months ago. You felt convinced the board to go to 1x. If you had to handicap the prospect of convincing the board for the next dividend, which is going to be at the interim, do you think you have a good chance, or we should be shooting for 0.5 at the interim?
What I said, I remember well, is that management would also feel comfortable at a gearing of 1x, which I wanted to say that we would not mind if there would be a consensus amongst the board that would basically mean that we would strive for a higher gearing. because we believe that this is not going to kill any option that RTL is or might pursue in the future. In this context, we said as management team, we wouldn't mind to also look at the upper part of that range. This is still accurate and true, and it has to end whatever we might discuss in August together with the board. So I think that this is also to be seen in the light of the M&A, and you know, if we were to pursue an objective in terms of expense is bigger than, for example, what we've done in the first quarter, the discussion could potentially be resolved at the same time.
Okay. That's very clear. And last question, not on the extraordinary dividend. You said that for the rest of the year you're expecting to lose less share to ProSieben than in Q1, where according to your slide you lost 2 points of share. So could we have an idea of how much you think you're going to be losing or advertising share, net advertising share in Germany for the full year?
I will not give you now a precise guidance or forecast for the full year, but what we said is that we expect our audience and advertising market performance to be brought in line with prior year, and growth means a small loss. I believe that we should be in a position to maintain that within a rather small range, but you know, I can't give you any more precise figures as we speak.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have a follow-on question from the line of Laurie Davison from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead with your question.
Just one follow-on. Just following All3Media was one of the assets you were reported to be looking at earlier this year. I think it was January we had trade reports that you were looking at that asset. Previously, you said you're ruling out major acquisitions on a super large scale, including Endemol. Can you just say whether there are any other assets of the kind of All3Media size you're actually looking at, or are we into the smaller bolt-on content and digital assets?
Laurie, yes, I can confirm that we said that we would rule out to acquire very significant companies, like, for example, in the mall, because here we are talking, I believe we all know this, about probably an acquisition price north of 1 billion. And we said that we will not go into this direction. Let's not speculate, and I will not be in a position now to chip in any names of companies we may or may not pursue. But let me just use this opportunity, again, to get back to the discussion we had earlier. We will not exclude to acquire in a single year a company below 1 billion, even though we don't pursue this actively as we speak. But when we talk, for example, about dividend capacity, there might be a single year in which we will go for a company, and please don't see this as a confirmation that we were on that, because just please don't speculate on this, because this is not the way, the reason why I'm asking this. But if we would have looked at all three and look at the valuation that was put on the table earlier today in the communication, that would have meant that then automatically our gearing would have been north of 4.5. So what we cannot rule out is that we will not go through 1 billion plus acquisitions. We'll continue to focus on smaller than 1 billion assets. There's nothing that we should speculate on as we speak. It would be premature to announce something, but we will continue to explore opportunity to grow our content, our digital business.
Thanks very much, and thanks for your patience in answering all the questions about Kesson. Thank you.
Thank you. And we currently have no further questions coming through. So one final reminder for you, ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypads now. And we have no further questions coming through, so I'll hand you back to your host for any concluding remarks. Thank you.
Yes, then Andrew and I would like to thank you for joining us today. We both look forward to speaking to you later in this year and wish you a good rest of the day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining today's conference. You may now replace your handsets. Thank you. Yeah.